Today's program is brought to you by Brooklyn Cares Veterinary Clinic, providing the highest level of veterinary care to pets throughout the Clinton Hill neighborhood of Brooklyn, New York, and surrounding areas since its founding in 2008. For more information, visit brooklyncaresvet.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings, and welcome to another episode of Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, and I've got Jack Inslee as my amazing engineer. Welcome to the show. Today we've got David Graves on the line. He's an urban beekeeper. Dave is calling in from Beckett, Massachusetts, where he and his wife and daughter produce over 30 different kinds of jams and jellies that they sell at various farmers markets throughout New York City. Dave's been working with bees since 1985, and his first rooftop hive was in Williamsburg, Massachusetts, on the roof of his father's Chevrolet garage. Since then, he's expanded to Manhattan. Dave's first New York City beehive was on top of the Green Market office building on East 16th Street in 1996. Presently, he has locations in the West and East Villages, as well as the Upper East and West Sides. Hi, Dave. How are you today?
Good. How are you, Celia?
I'm great. Thank you so much for speaking to us. I'm really looking forward to learning about bees and what we can do to help them.
Oh, good. I'm glad I could be here.
I'm thrilled that it's you. I did so much research on this, and when I finally was able to track you down, I mean, I'm absolutely thrilled about this interview. So thank you so, so much in advance for this whole thing, because I'm really excited.
Thank you for having me.
So my first question is, how did you get interested in beekeeping? Were you the kind of kid that liked bugs?
Not really. When I was a child, I grew up in Williamsburg, Massachusetts, and my dad taught me how to hunt and fish and how to garden, how to respect animals, but really never got into beekeeping until I was an adult.
Huh.
I kept bees here in Beckett and then went on to keeping a hive, my first rooftop hive, at my dad's Chevrolet garage.
I love that.
Yeah.
And is beekeeping something that was difficult for you to learn?
No, not really. It was, I got books. I read books on beekeeping, one written by Richard Taylor, who's no longer with us, a basic mm-hmm. beekeeping book. And he walked you through step by step, and I recommend people to use that if they want to take up beekeeping. Mm-hmm. That's a good start.
That's great. And then here's a question for you. Why do bees produce honey? Like, what's the honey's original purpose?
Well, the honey is their food, mm-hmm. and they need that to survive the winter, especially in the Northeast, because obviously there's no flowers.
Yeah.
It also acts as an insulator. It helps keep them warm.
Interesting.
During the wintertime. So we want to leave some for them. We don't want to take it all.
So I always assumed bees went dormant in the winter. Is that not the case?
Well, they're not really dormant. They kind of, they cluster, and they feed on stored up honey.
Okay. Now,
we need a January thaw and so that they can leave the hive to use the bathroom.
Oh, wow.
It needs to get up above 52 degrees and then fly to what we call a cleansing flight.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't always happen with this so-called weird weather.
Yeah. And so what happens if you don't get that?
Well, they could die.
Mm.
They'll actually stay clustered. They won't break cluster to feed on honey, and they could starve.
Wow.
So that has been a problem. It's been a problem this winter. We went through a very cold winter, as you know.
Yeah, it was awful.
And it affected everything from bees to maple syrup production was way off, too.
Oh, wow. And so, if the temperature doesn't get high enough, can you artificially raise the temperature in your hive so that they're okay?
No, they're outdoors,
yeah.
So that's not really a good idea. Some people wrap them,
mm-hmm.
you know, with tar paper or in some sort of protective cover to help keep heat in. But at the same time, you've got to give them ventilation.
Yeah.
So it's not good to make it airtight. That wouldn't be a good thing.
Mm.
They need ventilation. But we rely a lot on Mother Nature to help us get through the winters, and lately Mother Nature has not been cooperating.
No, she hasn't. She's been, I don't know what's going on, but yeah, it's been cold and long, long winters.
Right, definitely right.
So how do bees make honey?
Well, honey is a complex natural food and contains carbohydrates, fructose, glucose, and other sugars. What they do is they fly from the hive and they gather nectar.
Mm-hmm.
and they place their long tongue into the flower and take up the nectar and put it into their stomach, and they bring it back to the hive, and they pass it on to a house bee, which adds a little bit of saliva. At the same time, they draw the nectar out on their tongue to evaporate more water from the nectar.
Wow.
When the water content drops to 35 to 40% from the original 60 to 75%, the bees spread the sweet liquid onto the walls of those hex cells and fanning it with their wings to get it down to 15 to 17% moisture content, and then they cap it with wax, and that tells me the beekeeper it's cured, ready to harvest. So it's quite a process. It involves a lot of teamwork, and you know, I learn every day about bees, and I'm always reading up on them. And I thought they primarily just use their wings for evaporation, but they don't. They actually, when they bring that nectar back to the hive, they stretch it out across their tongues, and evaporation takes place at that point too.
That's really amazing.
Yeah, it is.
It really is. It's something that, you know, it's amazing that we even have honey because it's so complicated to do the process. It's
right. Yeah, we have to plant more things that attract honeybees.
Yeah,
that's,
we do.
That's our job as humans.
Yeah, I want to talk more about that after we take a break because that's so important right now. And honestly, it's a topic that really, really freaks me out. But yeah, I want to spend a decent amount of time on that if you're okay with that as well.
Sure, not at all.
Okay, thanks. And how do they make beeswax?
Well, bees have 8 specialized wax glands under their abdomen.
Really?
Where they produce wax. And actually it comes out as a liquid. And then it's stored in a pocket in the back portion of the bee. And they remove the wax with their mandibles. They kind of bring it up to the front, to their mandibles, which look like a pair of pliers. And there they form it into these little combs. So it comes from liquid to flakes, and then they form it into combs with their mandibles that look like little pliers. They look like jaws, really.
Wow.
But they also need a source of nectar to produce wax. You know, if they don't have nectar, they can't produce wax. The glands won't produce that wax. And it comes off as little flakes.
Amazing.
When so, get a package of bees through the U.S. mail, they're constantly making wax, and you see these little flakes
coming through the screen onto the floor.
So my wife always makes me put a piece of cardboard down so the wax doesn't get on the floor, because it is hard to clean up.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm fascinated. I had no idea how they produce beeswax, and you know, then being able to make those, I guess it's a hexagon, those hexagonal.
Yeah, right.
It's amazing.
Excited shape, yeah, and they do that with their mandibles, and they're like little jaws, really.
I mean,
for cutting and shaping.
They sound like little geniuses.
Yeah, that's right.
It really is like...
It is. You can't teach them new tricks, but the tricks that they know, I mean, they've known this for millions of years. Bees have been around for a long, long time.
Truly, I'm so happy I'm talking to you. I'm learning so much. This is amazing.
Yeah.
How long does a typical honeybee live?
Well, the worker bee lives for about 45 days. A queen lives for 2 years. And the drone, the male bee, which has no ability to gather nectar or pollen, lives about 2 months. And drones are needed to mate with virgin queens. But the workers are living there for, you know, for about 45 days, and they have a lot of jobs to do with inside the hive. They don't, when they hatch, they don't immediately fly away. They have specific jobs, and that would include cleaning the hive, guarding the hive, making wax, storing nectar and pollen. And then the last few days of their lives, they actually leave the hive to gather nectar and pollen.
Wow. It sounds
that,
like...
That gets into the different types of bees, you know, and certainly there are 3 different types in a hive, and there's only one queen.
And is the queen kind of the boss?
Majority of them are workers, which are all girls.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
So the only males are the drones?
The drones are the males, right?
Wow.
And their only function is to mate with a virgin queen. And they're booted out in the fall. And it was often thought, and I read a recent article, that they thought that drones ate a lot of honey, but they probably don't eat that much.
Hmm.
Maybe 200, you know, drones in a hive, and they're not really the consumers. But they're being fed by the workers. They do live a life of luxury.
Really?
But they're kicked out in the fall. Nature's designed for them to be evicted.
Wow. And so how does a queen get chosen?
Well, there's only one queen in the hive.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get, just for example, when we get packages of bees through the mail, which I've been getting them throughout the month of May, and I just got my last tooth the other day, there is one queen that's been artificially inseminated in Georgia.
Oh, wow.
So she will lay up to 1,500 to 2,000 eggs a day.
What?
As long as there's enough nectar and pollen coming through the front door, she'll lay eggs.
Wow.
Now, if she should die, or if, I'll tell you a little story. This has happened about maybe 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I got a package of bees through the mail. And the bee, queen bee, arrived dead.
Mm.
So it comes in a little separate cage. So I took the cage and threw it into the bushes.
Mm-hmm.
Not thinking too much about it. And the farmer called me up the next day, installed the bees, and said, "All your bees are in the bushes."
Oh, no.
So she's still giving off pheromones, dead or alive.
Wow.
So you have to treat it like it were alive. So you install the queen in her little protective cage. And then I got on the phone and ordered a new queen in
mm-hmm.
the mail.
Yeah.
Now, if they were to make their own queen, they would feed a developing larvae royal jelly,
mm-hmm.
which is secreted by young nurse bees from their head. And that makes it grow into a bigger bee. And maybe three or four cells are designated as queen cells. And if they hatch simultaneously, they'll fight till one is dead.
Wow.
And sometimes it's a draw, so it's best for the beekeeper to check the hive frequently, because if that should happen, then best get on the phone and get a new queen through the mail.
Unreal.
Once she's hatched, she'll fly from the hive and mate with several drones in flight.
Wow.
And when the drone mates with a queen, he's dead. He died.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's
and
so
not
sad.
All drones mate with a queen. Maybe six or seven of them.
I wonder how they're chosen, you know, or the same, like, how is a larva chosen? Like, okay, this larva, we're going to try for a queen, you know, in these four or what have
you. Well, they sense that they're queenless, so nature has designed it for them to make a new queen. They can sense that there's no pheromones being given off,
mm-hmm.
and they'll designate certain cells, larvae, and feed that larvae for the whole period of development of the queen. So that means the queen hatches in 16 days.
Wow.
During that period of time, they're feeding it what we call bee bread. It's kind of pollen, honey, and royal jelly
uh-huh.
mixed together. And it's fed to that larvae, so it grows into this bigger bee.
Wow.
And it's a female, has developed ovaries, and once it's mated with the drone, it will lay eggs, and hopefully they're going to be all workers. But sometimes, as the egg passes out of the body, if it holds back the sperm, it's an unfertilized egg, so that'll hatch as a drone.
Oh, wow.
We don't want to see a lot of drones in the hive because, like I said before, they gather no nectar or pollen.
Yeah, yeah.
So we need a lot of worker cells. So we're looking for those. When we pull a frame out, we're looking for not bullet-shaped cells, which would indicate drones,
mm-hmm.
but for flat cells.
Wow.
That would indicate workers. So I just did that the other day, and there was a lot of worker cells.
Oh, good.
So I was happy about that.
Good, good, good. So what does a honeybee look like? Can you describe it? I know it's radio, so this is kind of tough, but just for people that have no idea.
They're equipped with, they're very well equipped. They have four wings, six legs. They're yellow and black. They're kind of fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
They have those little hairs on them, so when they go to a flower, They give off electromagnetic waves, which kind of zap the pollen onto their body, you know, in such a way that, you know, then they're pollinating at the same time, which is very important.
Yeah.
As well as gathering nectar. They have two big compound eyes, and then they have three little eyes on the top of their head. They're called a silly eye. And I always tell children that they're night vision. Inside the hive where it's dark, you know, they've got to see. So that helps them maneuver inside the hive. So
wow.
The silly eye on top of their head. And then, of course, they have antennae, mandibles.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have what we call spiracles that run along the sides of the bee, and that's where they breathe from. They don't breathe from their mouth. So they're very well equipped, and they fly up to 2 miles to gather nectar and pollen.
Wow.
They spend most of their time working.
I feel like we're talking about a space alien. I mean, I'm stuck at the three eyes on top of the head. I had no idea. I had no idea. Basically, all I can say.
The anatomy of the honeybee is quite amazing. It's very well equipped, and of course, it has the infamous stinger.
Yep.
And that's like a little barbed, and when it goes into you, since it's barbed, it's hard to pull out.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you should get stung by a honeybee, it's best to scrape it, and then you won't. If you grab it by the end, you'll inject yourself with more venom.
Mm.
So it's best to do to remove a stinger, just to scrape it with a little flat edge.
Well,
long fingernail works too.
Are honeybees aggressive like wasps?
No, not really. Honeybees are quite gentle. Actually, you know, they're sent through the U.S. mail. A lot of people can't believe that.
Yeah.
I had packages of bees at the Union Square Green Market the last couple of days, and they just cannot believe that they send those through the mail. But they're in what we call their swarm state. So they're very docile. And if that package should open up, it's a screened box so they can breathe. They'll stay right there because the queen is in there. So they're not aggressive. They have no home to defend.
Mm-hmm.
Once they get into the hive, they become defensive with their young. So then you have to use some basic beekeeping practices like a smoker and white suit, you know, look like a black bear.
Yep.
And they always approach the hive from the back, and sometimes I give it a little tap just to let them know I'm there. They can remember, so I want to treat them gently.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't want to crush anybody, because when I come back the next time, they might not be so friendly.
So they remember things like that.
Yeah, I think so. They're smart like that.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. You have to be very careful how you handle them, and I always approach the hive from the back. And of course, I keep it out of people's way, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
Totally, it's a lot
better.
People
don't really, you know, they're beginning to understand honeybees and beginning to accept them and beginning to realize how important they are.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, Dave, we need to take a break for a moment. So,
okay.
Talking to Dave Graves, bee expert, we will be back in 60 seconds.
Hi, I'm Jesse Kiefer, host of The Morning After. This summer, Heritage Radio Network is turning cinco. That's five for you non-Spanish speakers. Since our launch in 2009, we've continued to bring you food, culture, and content like nobody else, and we need your help. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a passionate, grassroots, action-oriented nonprofit organization. That means we depend on the support from listeners like you to keep us alive. If you love what you hear on Heritage Radio Network, visit our website and become a member today. Thanks for listening, and thanks so much for your support.
Animal Instinct is brought to you today by Brooklyn Cares Veterinary Clinic. Since 2008, Brooklyn Cares has been providing exceptional veterinary care to pets throughout Brooklyn, New York. Led by doctors Timothy Mann and Stephanie Liff, the practice advocates a gentle, holistic approach to caring for your pet and offers an impressive breadth of basic and advanced healthcare services for your dog or cat. This modern practice, conveniently located in the Clinton Hill neighborhood of Brooklyn, is fully equipped with state-of-the-art equipment to ensure that your pet receives the highest quality care, regardless of whether they're sick or injured, or simply visiting for annual wellness checkup. For more information, visit BrooklynCaresVet.com.
And we're back. We're talking to Dave Graves, bee expert, especially in urban settings. We were just talking about how smart bees are. So, Dave, I wanted to ask you, I mean, how smart do you think a typical honeybee is?
Well, they, you know, they've been around for millions of years, so we can't train them to do different things.
Yeah.
But they're a social insect, and they do make food for people,
mm-hmm.
Honey and pollen. And as far as being, you know, smart, I don't, you know, it's more instinct than anything, I guess. It's
yeah.
the way nature designed them.
Yeah.
But they're an amazing insect. You know, we rely on them so that we can enjoy so many fruits and vegetables like watermelons, pears, peaches, blueberries, strawberries. I mean, the list goes on and on and
yeah.
on. Without them, we wouldn't have an abundant crop of those types of things.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk about that, and I think this is the perfect lead-in for it, because, you know, the die-off of honeybees is a topic that is so bad at this point that it's in the news constantly. And I really don't think people realize or understand how dire this situation actually is. So I would love if you could talk about that a little bit and explain really what is going on.
Well, yeah, that is colony collapse disorder, and it's been going on for quite some time. Back in the 80s, it was this parasitic mite that kind of did bees in. And now, you know, there are mites, and we should start treating for them. I've been using integrative pest management, but I don't think it's successful. I might have to go to some very mild pesticides that are coming out now
mm-hmm.
to control Varroa mite. But the idea is to look for them and see if you have them, and there's different things you can do. I think one of the there's a couple of reasons why we're losing bees, maybe loss of habitat.
Mm.
The loss of habitat, I noticed one thing in New York City. I've been keeping bees since 1996, and one of the plants, it's kind of a controversial plant, it's called a Japanese knotweed. It's an invasive plant, but it was a huge source of nectar for honeybees in the fall. And that's been pretty much eradicated.
Wow.
So that is a problem. So what we have to do is plant things that bees are going to like.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important thing to do. So that could be a part of loss of habitat, but I can understand why they want to replace it with native plants, though. But I don't think anybody realized it was a source of nectar for honeybees. It makes the most delicious honey you've ever had. It's kind of dark in color, almost caramel candy taste.
Oh, yum.
See a little bit of that in the West Village last fall, but not much.
Mm.
Not enough to sell. Then, we get into the pesticides. And neonicotinoids may cause disorientation, weaken immune systems, and then they fall prey to such things as varroa mites and fungal and bacterial infections. That's a huge and complex problem. I don't quite understand. I never use pesticides. Never was licensed to use them. I don't believe in using herbicides, weed killers, or anything like that. I do everything by hand. But I'm not going to feed the world like that,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
That's the problem. And I think these neonicotinoids are used in large-scale agriculture. I've never seen crop dusters fly over Manhattan.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I did lose a lot of bees this year.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of hives. Then, of course, there's the EMF, electromagnetic frequencies could cause disorientation. I have pictures I show people of me on rooftops back in the 90s, hives that stood almost as tall as I do.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere near that size anymore. But what do you see now that you didn't see back then? All of these cell repeaters and cell phone towers.
Yeah.
Everywhere. It's possible that the electromagnetic frequencies are interfering with the honeybee's orientation. They become disoriented. And they rely on electromagnetic waves from the Earth's surface to navigate.
I mean, it makes sense. I remember talking to a person who was an energy worker when the World Trade went up first and was talking about that antenna up there and was really concerned about it because energetically, apparently, it's in a really bad spot and it's really affecting a lot because it's so
right.
powerful, you know? So I'm wondering if, I mean, the distance is so far, too, that, you know, it'd be interesting if you could do some kind of study of, like, a hive, you know, on the World Trade and see what happens when you are with
right.
that extreme to, you know, somewhere like up in Beckett where, you know, you don't have 10 million cell towers every 5 feet.
Yeah, we have four. That's a lot. And we get cell phone service all over the place now. So I mean, I've seen pictures of electromagnetic waves. It looks like a mass of wires. They're invisible. Mm. They're going through us, I guess. And, you know, I've been all my life, I've been an avid runner and, you know, have run a sub-3-hour marathon. And
wow.
Don't smoke, don't drink. Then I've been in New York for 21 years. I developed atrial fibrillation.
You're kidding.
I have AFib, and I have to take medication for it. I still jog, but it's like I have a governor on me all the time.
I hear you. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. So they say that that's a possibility. It could be electromagnetic waves throwing my heart rhythm off because electricity flows over your heart.
Yep.
You know, and my currents aren't lined up.
And also, you know, if you get along so well with bees, it's very possible that the energy that you're emitting as well is positive towards them. So, I don't know, maybe the bees are wearing off on you a little bit or rubbing off on you,
right.
I should say, you know.
Yeah. Then of course, you know, you get into all these weather changes, you know, global warming, now they're calling it weird weather.
Yeah.
And like I said before, you know, we had such a cold winter and no real January thaw. Just frigid, those bees are locked into that position. They're not breaking cluster to feed on honey, and we call it cold starvation.
Mm.
A lot of that gone on. So then the only thing you do is you salvage what honey's left,
mm-hmm.
then you sell it.
Now, I have a question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the big things that I've been hearing, I have quite a few friends that are vegans, and as you know, they won't eat honey because they think that it's exploiting the bees and that sort of thing. But for someone like you, who is an educated beekeeper that knows what they're doing, is anything that you're doing endangering these bees?
Oh, no, not at all. No. Well, see, in the old days, I use Langstroth hives, so you can pull the frames out.
Mm-hmm.
In the old days, you what they call skeps. They were, and you've seen those woven things?
Yeah.
They look kind of round.
Yep.
And I've read where they had to kill the bees to get the honey out.
Oh.
We're not killing any bees. And now there's different designs of hives that they call it top bar beekeeping,
mm-hmm.
which where I try not to use any metal inside the hive and no plastic frames. Everything is wood.
Mm-hmm.
Top bar beekeeping, the hive runs horizontally.
Oh, wow.
And they're not stacked up on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
More like they're building the hive inside of a tree.
Okay.
You're providing that kind of environment for them. The only trouble with that is, see, I've tried those in Beckett, but I can't get them up on a roof, and the bears get into them.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, bears must love you.
I have black bears. I got hit by black bears last week.
Oh.
I hived outside my barn.
Oh.
And the thing that finally worked was the radio. I had a talk radio on. 24/7. And it kept the bears out of my barn and away from my barn, and it kept the chickens happy because the bears got in and actually ate my chickens.
Oh, no.
Literally, about 2 years ago. I tried everything, electric fence. So the radio worked until the other night it went static.
Oh, no.
Yep. So I knew something was fishy. Sure enough, they tipped over a couple of hives, and they actually ate the bees and whatever food was there.
Oh.
Yeah, they come in at night when it was cold. It's been cold up here. It's been in the 40s.
Yeah.
By midweek again. And, they're sitting ducks.
Mm-hmm.
And there's protein in those bees. And, of course, they want the larvae and the honey. It's not always the honey.
Yeah.
Like that larvae, the eggs.
And in terms of the bee stings, like, they really could care less.
Yeah, and they're going in there at night, so it's a surprise attack.
Yeah.
It's almost like chickens. You can move chickens around at night because they're so docile.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're like that. I imagine they got stung a few times, but bears are pretty tough.
Yeah, they really are. And they don't give up. I mean, bears, once they get something in their head, that's it. You're done.
Oh, yeah. And they're so hungry coming out of hibernation.
Mm-hmm.
They'll eat just about anything. And then, of course, we get into pollution. And pollution causes flowers to lose scent.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So bees need a sense of smell to find nectar.
Mm-hmm.
That's their reward when they go to a flower, is the nectar.
and that all those electromagnetic waves, electromagnetic charges from the bee's body, you know, bring that pollen right to them. It collects on their hairs.
That's so amazing.
Yeah. And then, of course, ozone depletion could cause bees to go blind.
Oh, my God.
Eye doctors told us to wear sunglasses.
Yeah, yeah.
And even on cloudy days.
Wow. You
know, because of ozone depletion. But I don't know if they're alive that long to be affected by that. That's my argument there, but I read that somewhere.
It's a good point.
Yeah, but it's something to be concerned about.
Absolutely. I mean, it's wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
A lot of stuff there.
There really is a lot of stuff. So, I mean, what can we as people that have gardens or that plant planters or, like, what are the good plants to plant for the bees?
Yeah, well, I planted, I have this 1 acre of very gravelly area next to where we make the jelly on Route 20 in Beckett, and they just filled that in with gravel. So what I've been doing is digging out areas maybe 3 foot in this circumference, putting compost and chicken manure in there and planting, well, I planted beech blooms, been planting those. Beech plums grow on sandy beaches. They like poor soil, and they grow good.
I made
beech plum jam last
year.
Oh,
yum!
Yeah, and that's hard to come by. And this year they're flowered again, and bees were all over. My bees were all over them.
Yay.
So beech plum. And I've been handing out seeds to people in New York.
Oh, cool.
Because I saved all the seeds, so they can plant those. But that's just one thing. You know, a lot of herbs can be planted, like rosemary, lavender. I mean, I always dreamed of someday flying over New York and the whole city had blue rooftops, you know, from lavender.
Oh, my God, that'd be so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd all be so calm. We wouldn't know what to do with ourselves. Everyone would be all chilled out for lavender. Nothing would get done.
So I guess there's a movement out there to develop bee-friendly gardens. Plants that will attract honeybees. Sunflowers are simple. Children can grow. I mean, I can remember in grade school growing those in paper cups.
Yeah.
Sunflower. I think we've all done that.
Yeah, and I love them. They're beautiful.
Yeah. And things like currants and thyme, and rosemary. There's all kinds of things. I applied to this American Bee Journal, and it listed. And I carry it with me. I don't have it with me right now. It's in my vehicle, but I'll bring it with me tomorrow at the green market, and I have it out on my stand.
Oh, nice.
And gives people ideas of what they can grow, and they can buy a lot of the stuff right there at the green market, a lot of the herbs that honeybees love.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Good.
Thyme is this one.
It's, you know, this is up to all of us, and I don't, you know, people don't get that, and it was funny because I was talking to someone who's a much, much older man and had no idea about this issue and had heard about it on the news, but was very flip about it and was, you know, it was finally like, listen, you know, no bees, no food, and that's
right.
When it kind of clicks.
Yeah. I was listening to a special a while back, I think it was on 60 Minutes, where the fellow was... migratory beekeeper out of Pennsylvania, David Hackenberg, I think his name is. And anyway, he was the first one, the disappearance of the honeybees, they all left his hives. And a guy got on and said, yeah, we're going to be down to eating gruel if we don't solve this problem.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's even, I mean, we won't be eating gruel after a while because, you know, I'm not sure about wheat, but I mean, all those grains need to be pollinated in one way or another.
Yeah, like alfalfa. Yep. You know, 80% of this stuff needs pollination. I did do some study on a mason bee, a mason orchard bee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a solitary bee, and you build. I have these little boxes that I build and drill holes in them about 5/16 of an inch, about 4 inches long, little square block of wood. And you attach it to the side of your house and attracts a mason bee, which will lay eggs in there. Doesn't make honey, but is a very good pollinator. One mason bee will do what 100 honeybees will do.
Wow.
So, and they're independent of each other, and they don't sting. You know, you don't have to put them up over people's heads or anything like that. But they're very good pollinators, and I have a couple of these boxes hanging at my place in Beckett on Route 20 where we make the jelly.
Mm-hmm.
But they need like a muddy area so they can make that little mason, that little ball of mud.
Oh, yeah.
So they get named mason bee. So they lay several eggs along this tube, and in front of each egg is a little barrier of mud. And then that hatches and goes out and pollinates and dies. And then the next year, well, they winter over in a little cocoon, and then they reemerge in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the flowers have gone by, the adults pass away, but they leave their eggs around for the next generation to reemerge the following spring. But I guess they're all around us, you know. And it's funny, though, I've been at the market 4 days a week in New York, and I've seen a bumblebee only twice.
Mm.
Bumblebees are good pollinators, but I've only seen two. I don't know if it's the same one I'm seeing.
Exactly.
<You know. laughs> It shows up every day just to say hello or what?
Just checking out the scene.
Yeah, but that's kind of scary.
It is scary, and I even remember being a child, you know, in the summer especially, you know, all the kids have, like, their ice pops, and, you know, there's all this ice cream and all this sugar and water and stuff in trash cans, and there would always be tons of bees swarming in the trash cans, and you don't see that anymore.
No, those are yellow jackets, and they're needed. They're carnivorous, a lot of yellow, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They clean up the dead animals, but they're all part of the scheme of things. So we do need those, and we need wasps, too, even though they're a little more aggressive.
Yeah, they're kind of scary.
Yeah.
But they're beautiful.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Bumblebees, butterflies, bats, all are pollinators, but we're fast losing them.
Yeah, we are. I mean, bats are really, really going down quickly as well for very similar reasons, and it's just... You know, it's everything is so connected, and people really don't realize it unless they're in... I feel like it's the food production people that really understand this the best. Because,
right.
You know, they're in it, and you're doing this every single day, you know, so you're able to see changes before they're so drastic. You know, it's like, well, it's really important.
But it was like Christmas morning when I saw my bees on those beach plums. You know, I was so happy.
Oh.
I was weeding underneath them, and I heard this, you know, low buzz.
Yay.
All these bees all over my beach plums. So they like beach plums. There's nectar there.
I
could see the pollen on their back legs. It was brown in color.
Aww.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And it's, I'm so amazed by this interview. I really had no idea. And so for someone who might be listening who's like, I want a hive, is it difficult to take care of one?
Well, you do need some knowledge. You know, you should get some basic a beekeeping book to read up on it first, to learn all the terminology.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not rocket science. It just involves some, you know, some study.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best thing to do. I mentioned that basic beekeeping book by Richard Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
You can subscribe to the American Bee Journal. They send you a magazine every month. They've got all the updated information about beekeeping in there, and it's very inexpensive. And then there's another fellow by the name of Dr. Keith Delaplane. He writes, he's from the University of Georgia. He's got some good books out there. And he was the first tape that I watched. It was a three-part tape that I watched on a VCR.
Oh, wow.
A long time ago. I still have his three-part tape. But that was helpful. It can be expensive, though. I did price out some equipment the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get a kit for under $200, about $197. And the only thing you'll need is some equipment, like you need a bee suit, that runs about $300. They're not cheap.
Oh, wow.
$110, I think it is, for the bee suit. It's $300 for the small extractor.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you get the honey out of the frames. But sometimes people will take a decapping tool and run along the length of the frame and place it on a, well, on an oven tray of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
I knew a guy that did that and put the oven on very low, or just use the heat from the pilot light, and the honey will drain down into another container below it.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of it takes a long time to do it that way. But, yeah, this kit was $196, and it contained two shallow supers, two deep supers, a bottom board, Boardman feeder, an entrance reducer, Heise tool, and that's $196. Then you want a Heise tool, which looks like a flat screwdriver,
mm-hmm.
$7. The B-jacket, $118. The gloves are $14. Uncapping tool is $104. It looks like a knife that you plug into a wall socket.
Oh, wow.
You get the caps off the frames with that.
Mm-hmm.
A compact extractor, I think the smallest one was $300. Bees are about $70. So you're up to $913. Some of this stuff you're only going to buy once.
Right.
The bee jacket, the gloves, and the uncapping tool. And then sometimes you can copy it. You know, if you're a good woodworker, so I've made my own hives, too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so it's pretty simple to put together, but you can, you know, if you're a woodworker, you can make your own.
Yeah.
So you get one, use that as a guide.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've made parts before. Yeah.
Really, really amazing. So what is the most satisfying thing for you about bringing hives to New York City?
Well, that's a good question, because I've been doing this since 96, and it was an interesting part of my life to do something that not too many other people have done, put hives on rooftops in an urban setting.
Yeah.
The first question people ask you is, where's the food down here? all they see is concrete. But the most rewarding thing is to reach out to school children and teach them. Green Market takes me around to various public schools. I was just at one last week.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that's a lot of fun. It's some preparation. You know, you have to develop a lesson plan.
Yep.
And last week we showed children how to install a hive from a package of bees. We didn't have the live bees there. We just used popcorn.
Oh, good idea.
Make-believe bees. And we showed them how we feed them and how we take care of them. They're like pets. You know, they have to be taken care of. They can't be neglected.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you know, for someone that wants to take care of a hive or get a hive, there is work involved in this. It's not put it together, walk away, and, you know, honey, hooray,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you're not going to go to the Hamptons for a month and then come back and find everything normal.
Good thing to know.
Yeah, I have to check one tomorrow to make sure, you know, because they build up fast in the spring, and you don't want them swarming, so you have to give them ample room.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I put an empty hive on a rooftop so they have a place to go.
Yeah, yeah.
In case they did swarm, it's like a backup.
Wow.
Because it just draws the wrong attention.
Mm-hmm.
They're not dangerous. They're not going to sting people. They're very docile, but a lot of people don't know that.
No, and a lot of people are terrified of bees.
Yeah, that's right. So you have to expect that, because we're kind of a minority, really, beekeepers. We're getting more popular as time passes.
I think your time is coming. I really do. I think that you guys are going to be like urban rock stars soon, because it's you know, as this information is getting out, there's more and more panic. And when I spoke to a few friends and told them that I was interviewing you, and all of them were just, I mean, the reactions were really, really excited and all kinds of questions, you know, and some of the questions I've asked you today are from there, where a lot of times I'll do an interview and they're like, that's great, you know, there's no questions or anything, but everyone I've spoken to about this is like, oh my God, bees, what can we do? What can we do? What's going on?
Right.
So I think it's...
That's great. That's good to hear. And, you know, when I'm at these markets, I do a lot of that too, you know, just talking them up and, you know, I have a little display there and show them how we get bees through the mail and how we install them, and so it's fun. That's very rewarding, teaching people what I know.
Yeah,
and I also learn from them, because when I first came to New York, I didn't know what grew down there either. you know, it was always linden trees. But there's locusts and there's sumac, and I learned all these things from different people.
Oh, cool.
Who had rooftop gardens, you know, and
mm-hmm.
They asked me, what can I plant for the bees? And then I'd research it, and I'd tell them, So that was very rewarding. Still is. It's an ongoing thing.
Are you hoping to expand to other areas? Because, I mean, we'd love to have you in Red Hook.
Yeah. Well, no, not at this point.
Boo!
You know, like I say, I don't want to get overwhelmed. At one time, I did have 17 highs, and that was too much.
Holy cow.
And that's a lot of highs in an urban setting, you know, because I was checking them all the time. And,
wow.
And it takes a long time to get around the city.
Yeah, no kidding.
I did to get to know the trains, but to drive, it's nearly impossible to find parking.
Yeah, it's the worst.
Yeah. So I cut way back just to make it manageable.
Yeah.
You know, and spend more time with each hive, and that way they don't become neglected.
Mm-hmm.
That's important.
That's really important. So it's better to do less beautifully than 10 and
be miserable. Yeah, with so many problems with the bees, and they really need to be, you know, hands-on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get too many, it just you're spread too thin.
Wow. Well, I want to know where people can get your jams and your good products, and where can they find you and talk to you?
Well, I'm at Union Square year-round, Monday, Wednesday, Saturday. And I do 79th and Columbus on the Upper West Side on Sunday. And we're online, berkshireberries.com. And they can come talk to me anytime they want. They can email me, and I'll answer their questions. I always encourage that. It's a fun thing for us to do.
Cool.
We like to interact with people, especially when it comes to bees. We make over 30 different kinds of jams and jellies. And Mary makes some interesting jelly. One is garlic raspberry.
Yum! Oh, my God, that sounds so good.
I do grow garlic. In fact, I just got back from weeding out my garlic.
Wow.
So we do grow our own garlic, and I do make my own maple syrup. But
yum.
I've been making syrup since I was 6 years old.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
In a 55-gallon drum with a little wash tub and a smokestack that my older brother built.
Aww.
Yeah.
Oh,
that
was so great.
1956.
Wow.
I was years old.
Careful, Dave. You're dating yourself here.
Yeah, I know. But I don't feel that old.
Awesome. You don't sound that old.
Yeah. But, they can come talk to me anytime at Union Square. Welcome. That or 79th in Columbus. We do get a lot of questions.
I'll bet you do. And I wanted to say thank you. We are out of time, unfortunately, Dave. I have loved this interview. I've learned more in this interview than I have in many, many others. And I really appreciate what you do. I really, really do.
All right.
I'm going to find
you. Thank you very much for having me. I do appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
I've enjoyed it, too. And I'm going to find you at the market and officially introduce myself in person. And I'm going to buy a bunch of your jams. And I want to hear more about the bees. And
yeah,
so thank you so much. Thank you for Heritage Radio Network, for the show, to you, the listeners.
All right. Have a nice day.
Thank you, you too. And to everybody out there, have a great week.
I will. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.